welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. I love speaking with people who are a stand for humanity and children and who carry truth and optimism about our future. There's a wonderful strength to these people that flies in the face of all the doom and gloom that we all hear. Today, my guests and I range far and wide, but one of the takeaways is the desire for unification for our country. Both sides have been traumatized by the divide, family and longtime friend groups, pulled apart by differences of opinion and the engines of social media that seem to know just how to trigger all of us. One of the things that I came away with is my own desire to hear the other side. I think I have finally set aside my own hurt feelings over having dear friends leave my orbit, and I feel more steady now, less reactive, and ready to serve more of humanity, not just my fellow conservatives. My guests and I share stories and a similar desire to start to heal what has ailed our fellow Americans, regardless of political orientation. Today's interview is a really good one and a little longer than normal, so let's get right to it. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Jessica Arburn. Jessica is a mother, a patriot, another walkaway from the left, and the director of Mom Army, a group of courageous women standing to protect our children. Here is my interview with Jessica Arburn. Okay, I am here with Jessica Arburn, mother and leader in Mom Army, Jessica Arburn. Jessica, welcome back to Base Camp for Men. It's good to talk to you again.
Thank you, Tony. It is so good to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, you know, we did a great episode back a couple seasons ago. It might have been season five. It was kind of in the wake of COVID, and we were sleeves rolled up. You were like, Mom Army was battling for all kinds of things, you know, putting children first and medical freedom and all the things that you guys stand in your principles. But before we really get rolling, I just wanted to give you a chance to just briefly introduce yourself and just give us a little update on Mom Army. Because I know, like, up here we had a group that was sort of centered around the same principles, you know, of freedom and sovereignty and medical choice and choice for our children. And then when COVID kind of finally, I don't want to say was defeated. It was kind of Trump came in. The situation kind of changed drastically. And I think for this group up here, it was left, wait a minute, are the issues, the two or three things that we were really about, all of a sudden, it doesn't seem as prevalent of a fight, I want to say, although they're still important. But I think that group was kind of looking for, okay, how do we assert our principles? What do we do now that maybe the threat of sticking us in concentration camps for re-education has kind of faded out, maybe. And we've already made all these alliances and sort of and all this headway. How do we want to assert ourselves? So I just wanted to give you a chance to maybe address that a little bit on Mom Army front to find out maybe how that's changed your thinking.
Sure. Yeah, thank you. So I guess I'll start out by just a little bit about myself. I'm a mother of three young boys, homeschooling mother. So that's a facet of myself that I think is really important. I also am an interior designer by profession, which is a really interesting thing. When I think about all of the reasons why I'm talking to you, it's the thing that I do on my day to day. But you know, my real passion has fallen into this fight to protect children, and that's where Mom Army comes into play. And I've been with Mom Army since our inception, which is 3 years ago. We celebrated our 3 year anniversary August 8th of this year. And you're so correct, Tony. You know, there's kind of these need for things that come up, and there's a lot of energy that can be placed in one direction, and then all of a sudden that kind of dries up, and there's a necessity to pivot, to use a very to use term,
Yep.
and redefine. And we certainly have done that. We'll continue to do that. And then some of our, main principles are still very much founding us and rooting us in the work that we do. And I think, primarily what we've always done, and one of the main reasons why people find us, is that they have felt very alone. So we are very much coalition building. And Sieg Smith, our founder, says this amazing thing, and I'll share it for you as well, to find your tribe, find your people, so you don't waste your energy translating yourself. Yeah. And I think that's just really important, especially as you become activated, and maybe not everyone in your space is as activated as you. And so you're looking to your circle to speak on these things, and especially when it's new. So I think finding your people is really important, and that's really what Mom Army sought out to do. And then to also, of course, bring awareness to this war on children that is subtle in some ways and very overt in others. Where we're focused right now on all the fronts, but we really are focused on local activation, as far as supporting local members, if they'd like to run for office, how to support them in their passion, their projects, and then this sort of national coalition of groups that have found each other. What's really interesting about the conservative movement, and the fight to protect children, is not political. Let me just put that out there. I think you know that too. But philosophically, it really does align with the conservative movement for whatever reason. I still don't understand that. The kind of issue with the conservative movement is we are such a group of free thinkers. Like, truly, not thinking we're free thinkers, but we actually are. And that makes us a little challenging to wrangle to get together. We kind of move a little isolated that way. And so we've been coalition building for years now, and we have this really vast, amazing network of people that we can call on. And again, not wasting our energy recreating the wheel. If someone else is already doing it, we don't need to do it. There's no competition, there's no ego in protecting children. So we're going to align with that group, and we're going to do what we do, and they're going to do what they do, and we're all going to, as a community, really help each other. So yeah, we've kind of got the local activation, national coalition happening, and a number of initiatives. We have a next fall, we have a Mom Army Summit, which is a 3-day summit. We did this last year for the first time, which was incredible. And it's not just for women, it's for women and men. And then we are doing a Dad Army Dad Con, where we're creating an event to support families, really, but specifically dads, in stepping into that role and what that means. And that opens, that's a whole other conversation there. So that's kind of where we are, what we've been doing, but we're certainly ongoing and growing and supporting each other, really.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, and to speak to your point earlier, why does the protecting children, why does it seem to be so aligned with the conservative movement? It's subtle, but families are really celebrated in the conservative movement. It's like, I mean, it's everybody celebrates children, everybody celebrates your family. And it's not to say that the left doesn't celebrate families, but they're much more, I think they've been educated, and this is no judgment. They're really educated that we're overpopulated on the planet. So it's more common for a liberal woman, say, to say, I don't think I want to have children, because I don't think that's responsible, because maybe I have an eco, I see the ecosystem in a certain way, and or maybe I just don't like kids that much. I see that it's a strain on the finances. Like, you know what I mean? I think liberals are, and I know this because I used to be one, that you're really educated to either not have children or at best maybe have one, not have a big family. The whole, three, four, or five, that's really comes out of the conservative principles in a way to celebrate God and family. And so, and I'm not saying, anything about that, like whatever is your path is your path, but I definitely see one where children are more celebrated. And for my former and friends that are on the left, when I talk about kids, they don't really have skin in the game. I know a lot of liberals who don't have kids. And so all this stuff about war on kids, they're not really seeing that much. And they don't have anybody in the school system. So they're like, nah, I don't, it's not a first thing that I'm thinking about, right?
Sure.
Where for us, you've got three kids, I've got one, and it's like, what is going on down at the school? What are that? Do I got to pull them out of there? That's not, where a liberal with no kids, I think they're just, it's not, it's again, it's no judgment. They just don't have skin in the game. They don't have what is, when you have children, it becomes super important what you're exposing them to. And I think liberals, with no children, they understand that abstractly, but that it's not in their bones the way it is for us. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. They don't embody that in the same way. Yeah, that's a, it's a, it's an interesting point. And I know you know this, but I will make sure to mention that I am a past liberal as well. So, and I've absolutely in my youth said those words that I don't plan on having children. I've absolutely said
Yep,
that.
me too.
Which is, you reminded me of that just now, actually. So it's an interesting, it is an interesting thing. And so if there isn't a deep reverence for children, then it's, you can really, the allowance, is probably greater of what you would.
For sure, for sure. Well, and you had said something.
Yeah.
It's funny. You had reached out and just kind of pinged me on Instagram. Said, "Hey, how you doing?" And it's funny. God works in mysterious ways because I was thinking about you as this season was winding down. You were on my. I run like a long list of potential guests, including returning guests that I really enjoyed talking to, and you were on that list. And I was just kind of like, "Huh. I wonder what she's up to. I should check in with her." And then you pinged me, and then I went and clicked on, and I saw a post of yours where you were talking about how sort of, and I'm paraphrasing here, how kind of everything that triggers you about the other side, if you're a liberal, it's the conservatives, perhaps. If you're a conservative like us, it could be the left or, a particular person. Donald Trump triggers a lot of people on the left, for instance. And you were saying kind of, everything that triggers us is really an opportunity. It's something for us to learn, right? And I 100% agree. I've done a ton of work on shadow work and all that. And I just wanted to give you a chance to address that a little bit because I don't know about you, but whenever I get triggered by something, and let's just say I get triggered by something on the left. They're flaring up about something. Oh, like Seattle here, they're like, we don't need to like keep, repeat criminals in jail. The mayor just said, because I want to know more of their story, right? And it's like he's committed 10 different felonies. Like, what story do you want? Like, go down and talk to him in the jail and write his biography, Mayor Harrell, if that's really important to you. But
Wow.
what are you referring to? Like, and it just so it really triggers me, like, what an idiot, blah, 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 blah. And but I realize underneath the trigger, there's something with me that's going on. There's some sort of like projection, am I, and so I just wanted to give you a chance because I feel played a lot of times when I get triggered by social media or the media. I feel like they're doing it. They know what my triggers are. The algorithms know Tony gets pissed off when we post this stuff. You know what I mean? And so we're gonna send him a bunch of stuff because we know this is agitating him. Does that make sense?
It does, and I actually don't disagree with you on a lot of levels. And I will say, I think it's really remarkable as well. I love hearing you talk about shadow work and this personal introspection. I really think it's a fundamental issue when we start looking at this divisiveness. I really do, and There's a lot in all of that, and we could go. I don't know how far you want to go with that. I'm happy to go as far as
As
you'd like.
much as you want, as much as you want. Yeah, I'm here for it.
Yeah, but it's funny, and you did mention me reaching out on Instagram. And one thing that I will mention, just to kind of jump back into the war on children, which is a really interesting thing. I reached out. I just started up a new page. My page previously, which is how we even could connected, it was taken down. So all of that connection and coalition building that I had done for all these years was just kind of moved pretty quickly, which is another interesting thing. Why are these things happening? How am I out of community standards when I'm speaking about protecting children? So it's kind of an
Did
interesting thing.
you shift? Was it one? Did you shift into something else and they went, get her out of here? Or was you were just constantly, there wasn't anything really out of your lane that happened, you know? Like
Yeah.
I think I got banned off Twitter, but I was shit talking for years about the deep state, right? And I think it changed when I went, oh, they're rolling these quote unquote vaccines out, this mRNA. They haven't tested this thing, people. I've got a doctor here. As soon as I started with that, they were like, get him out of here. And so for me, I could see clearly it was my outspoken episodes about medical freedom that got me in the crosshairs and got me kicked off. And so if you're doing content, was there a shift in tone or issue that all of a sudden they went, or you were just doing the same thing and they're like, oh, we're just cleaning house and you're one of the people we're cleaning house
Yeah,
with?
I think it was just affiliation, because I didn't have
Really?
a ton of huge followers. It was just an account
Yeah.
that I started in my as I became kind of a truther. It was just someplace for me to like
Yeah.
rant. So yeah, nothing really changed. It evolved over time, but no, I think it was just my affiliation. And
Hmm.
as I started to maybe become affiliated in more spaces and was sharing. It maybe that is it. I hadn't really thought about it. But I wasn't able to I was not able to access protecting myself basically. Like it just was off the table. Like there was no, I just got caught in this loop of and I essentially just timed out and my account was deactivated. So yeah, that's the little story about where I disappeared into for a little while. But yeah, when I did start back up again, it was to celebrate the Mom Army 3 year anniversary, and then the Charlie Kirk assassination happened, and I was like, okay, here we go, it's time. And I had a really tough time with that, and I did do a little bit of. I like to kind of record myself ranting, and if something feels like I want to share it, I'll share it. And I was so perplexed over the first of all the celebration, and I don't want to hijack the question because I do think it's important, but the overlay was I was responding to Charlie Kirk, and personally, I'm a mountain biker. I had decided to do a unity ride, like of bringing people together, because Turning Point headquarters is actually right around the corner for me. So as far as I'm concerned, that's my neighborhood, and somebody in my neighborhood was lost. And so I set up a bike ride, and it was to mark the 1 week anniversary after we lost him. And we were going to start somewhere and then end up over at the TP headquarters, TP USA headquarters, which is really beautiful, by the way. And a friend of mine that I'd known for 8 years, a biking person, just absolutely went after me. A man just went after me, like cursing and just hateful. And this is a friend. So it was one of those things. It was like COVID all over again. And so it really kind of got me thinking, how is this such a divisive thing, and how is this so triggering? And to get back to what you were referencing, it really is kind of this reactive space that we get to. And these triggers really are. I see them now through work, and I'm sure you do as well, Tony. I see them now as gifts. They're insights into things that I need to look at a little bit harder inside myself. And I began to really apply that. I call that radical responsibility. That really, there's nothing that's outside the realm of my responsibility.
Love it.
Yeah, it's highly inconvenient, and I do find that especially on the left, it's not a space that they really like to live in. I noticed that during COVID, and again with Charlie Kirk's death, that it was so divisive, and how can people be so hateful? And it's a reactiveness, it's a trigger, it's a lack of awareness in your own body, your nervous system, and that rage. And this goes for me as well, the anger and the upset. So I have to take that in myself. It's not something I'm pointing out in others, and I'm off, just because I know I don't have to look at myself. But I do think that the rage comes from shame and fear, so that the moment that you are attacking someone else, it's really coming from a place of where in your life were you hurt so much that you are willing to do this to someone else? And I really likened the death of Charlie to the loss of a voice, the loss of a collective voice. And when we talk about a collective awakening, and I think that's happening right now too, we're activating within people this deep resentment for the places where they don't have a voice or they don't use their own voice in their lives. And I think that can be a really profound thought to entertain, and a very challenging one if you're not in the space of holding yourself accountable or responsible. But in that post, and as I was kind of saying it out loud, it hit me, and it really was, this voice was assassinated, and the radical responsibility of it is, where in your own life have you assassinated your own voice?
Yeah, there's so much there. I did my best. I don't know if liberals really fully understand how important Charlie Kirk was to the conservative movement and to conservatives. I mean, I went to a TP USA a couple years back down in Phoenix, and I just came away with it just so grateful and so just with a ton of love in my heart for Charlie and the community that he'd created and just admiration for this young man. And we all saw videos of him on IG debating, and it was but I did my best, Jessica. I tried to give the left grace, meaning I did see some things. Of course, the AI and the algorithms and Meta is going to push people that are going, ha ha ha, Charlie got killed. I took it, and my wife and I talked about this. I said, I'm not sure how much of this is actually a real person and how much of this is AI generated divisiveness. Because I spoke with a lot of Kennedy liberals at the athletic club that I'm a member of here in Seattle. And almost every single Kennedy liberal did not really understand who Charlie was, but was absolutely mortified and just like, what has our country become that this poor guy gets killed because he doesn't agree with these people that are transgender or whatever. I got to hear how can a good sample size. Now, I didn't talk to any kind of radical blue-haired Taliban types, like I don't, those are not at the athletic club. They don't go to gyms, I don't think. So over there in that extreme minority that might be going, good, because Charlie hated transgenders, even though he didn't. He just had an opinion about the whole agenda. I think that, so that kind of calmed me down and I kind of saw, I know there's probably a few mentally ill outliers celebrating somebody getting killed in front of his young family. But most common sense Americans across the board, and I talked to him because I was curious, are these, most of them were like, I kind of know the name Charlie Kirk, right? They didn't really know who he was other than, oh yeah, that picture. Oh, I recognize that guy. Or yeah, I did see a couple videos of him. He's the one that does talks, right, at colleges and gets in these debates or whatever. But they, for the by and large, they were not celebratory. They were mortified. And so I was glad to see that. I read the op-ed pages of the New York Times, which I like to glance at on Fridays to see, what are they talking about? They were also the same way. Like, there's no celebration here. This is not a great day for America that Charlie Kirk was assassinated. So I was like, okay, maybe there's common ground, you know? So anyways, that's a lot to kind of give you or to let you kind of take and run with a little bit, but that's what I found. And that kind of helped me to not feel so, oh, it's another us and them moment for me again. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, no, and I think mostly, and I really think just not even just in this one space, but even in the aftermath of COVID, I do think that there are these insanely divisive events that come up. And what I'm finding more and more is that there is this middle, and I'm really interested in the middle. The extremes on both sides. I mean, the conservative side certainly has extremists as well. And those, I think, unfortunately, the extremists are the ones that are getting, they have the play with the algorithm. And even this young man who took Charlie's life, in some way, he thought that this would be celebrated. And there are some insane people that are absolutely doing that. And that's a whole other commentary on just them as humans, as far as I'm concerned. They have so many more issues than just that. But I think we get this false sense. If we're not in our neighborhoods and we're not talking at the gym and we're not engaging with our community, then we are getting a false sense of what's actually happening. And we have to be very, very, very careful with this. Because you really can be sent so many images and horrors. And quite honestly, only God can hold all of this, as far as I'm concerned. Like the creator is the one that has the capacity, and we're striving to have that capacity, but we can't hold all of this at once, and we're not meant to. And so we really have to, on some level, stay in our own backyards. And most people are not out, like, to your point, celebrating the death of this man who is obviously dedicated to his family and his legacy. Most people aren't celebrating. So I do agree with you there, but I think the real danger is, and even, the friend of mine that came at me, where did you get the idea that this is like a thing that is being celebrated? Like, where did you come up with that? Because that's not a human reaction to death.
Not at all. Not at all.
And so we really have to get in this space of like checking your programming, and we have blind spots. We don't know where we're programmed. And there was another loss around the time of Charlie Kirk. I don't know if you're familiar with Boone Cutler. I believe it was the day after, which 9/11 hit us the day after as well. And he co-wrote The Citizen's Guide to Fifth Generational Warfare with General Flynn, which is a really interesting book as well. And they really talk about, this war on our cognition. This warfare, this fifth generational warfare, is not fought with bombs and guns. It's a manipulation of our thoughts and attitudes that we're unaware of. And this is where that kind of self-assessment, that radical responsibility, that like turning it inward, where did I get this information? Where did it come from? Why am I reacting in this way? This level of self-assessment, discernment, it's a practice that it's not like, oh, that would be nice, and even the shadow work that you talk about, all of this self-assessment, it's not like, and even, it's not like, oh yeah, I should do that. Maybe I'll commit to that in January as my New Year's resolution. This is actually like all important work, and it's costly. I mean, someone was killed because of programming, because they didn't have the tools to recognize that they were moving into extremism. And even this the guide, they talk about polarization, which is like really where we are, especially when we talk about the political front. And that polarization turns into this tribalization, where we're in our tribes and we've got our virtue signals. And it's just the most fabulous phrase. I don't know who coined that, but I think it's just the most virtue signal.
Beautiful.
And then, that really does move into dehumanizing people. And then we're just a couple steps away from well, if I dehumanize them, then I can actually remove that person. Their life doesn't matter. And so this work that we talk about, and I'm so happy to have you speak on it, and I'm happy to speak about it. And it's a big part of my parenting, and it's a big part of my passion as far as what I do in Mom Army. You know, guiding our youth in a way of understanding themselves, being on that path of knowing who you are, where you can begin to use these tools of radical responsibility, and you can begin to be aware of the programming that comes through the system. And awareness is just this magical thing that shines light on the darkness and doesn't allow it to grow.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, Jessica, that I think we all got kind of, we were all kind of butthurt by all the separation. I know I was during COVID. I fell on the what felt like a severe minority side on a number of issues. Turns out it wasn't as big of a minority as I thought originally, because it was just being portrayed that way on social media, because they're trying to get everybody into the, you know, pan to do the same thing that they were saying to do. But I found that there's like, throughout it all, I'm like, and I think there during that time, I mean, because we were in the minority, we're like, we gotta fight, we gotta make coalitions, let's fight. And that's great for a particular season. I found right now that, and I'm getting older, you know, I'm a man of a certain age, and I'm like, you know, it's just keep growing your humility. Like, you don't, it's in God's hands. Keep being an agent for God. Like, keep your heart open to humanity, and that includes all those that you're mad at and butt hurt by, that they abandoned you, you know, and all this stuff. Because you don't know the full story. And also, I could be wrong. You know, I've weighed in very publicly on this show on a whole bunch of things, and I was wrong about some of it. Some of it I was, they might say, oh, he was wrong about that, and I don't think I was, you know, like, but it doesn't really matter ultimately. Like, ultimately, the whole tribe of humanity is my tribe. I want everybody to thrive. And I want everybody to have their, to your point, to have their own awakening. It's not, I've gotten away. I think back earlier, I was like, wait till they see Dr. Fauci arrest for, you know, crimes against humanity, which they may still see that, you know, that's not off the table. However, rather than this kind of vindictive, you know, you were trying to, you know, do all this stuff to my people, how dare you? I've kind of seen it a little bit more the way we've been talking about it, which is like, well, so there's a part of me that's trying to control everything. There's a part of me that maybe doesn't like humanity that much. You know, I can't own that for myself, but I can see, okay, or maybe their incentives are just different. And maybe they really do love children, but they just show it in weird ways. You know, I can't imagine over there as much, and I find when I'm being kind of righteous, I'm making really broad generalizations about over there. And if I'm really going to be a true mystic and a true like warrior for God and people, there isn't really an over there. So I don't need to take that stance. That stance is actually making me more vulnerable to division. So if I could just keep prayer in my heart and just say, you know, I really want what's best for people, even the hate, you know, as to Donald Trump, even the haters and the losers, you know, it's like kind of, you know, he does this offhand thing where he's like, you know, happy Thanksgiving, even to the haters and the losers. And it's like, how do we not think that way, even though it's funny? But how do I keep it in my heart? Keep that, you know, I don't know God's plan for some long lost friend that called me a whole bunch of names during COVID. I don't know what that plan is. We may still be friends, really good friends, like 10 years from now. Who knows? Like, there's been so many twists and turns. I can't predict my own evolution or how God wants me to show up next or who's going to be a really good friend that I haven't even met yet. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so it's just, I think for me is like, get off my high horse has been the lesson the last couple of years. I've done my best to not be so judgy and like, I can't wait to do like, I told you so about the vaccines. It's like, I don't want people sick and with cancer. And like, I don't want that for them. Of course, yeah. I want them to wake up, but not, you know, I don't want to be celebrating what's going on with them. That's terrible any more than Charlie Kirk people where your biker friend is misguided. I don't want to be that for people that name called, because I just don't feel like God's telling me don't do that. That's not where I want you to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds like we've been on a similar trajectory over years. But yeah, I mean, I've kind of through that process, it sounds like we've actually been on a very similar thought process. Through that process and where I really live now, well, there's a couple things that I think of when you say that, but I think most importantly, the systems that we're looking at all around are so fragmented. I mean, even when we look at the school system, the way that we teach subjects separately. And there is a purpose to that. The fragmentation and the splintering of things is really important to so you can examine things in a certain way. But the step that we're always missing is the reunification process. We're not bringing it back together so that we understand everything as a whole. And that's, I think, where the division just lives. It's like we have this collective inhale and we haven't exhaled, and we're just all kind of freaking out. And I really think that the purpose of everything, well, that sounded very bold, but the purpose of reintegration, that helps us all find each other again. And that's really when you think about what our country was founded on. We were not in these, little pockets of everyone agreeing, at least from my understanding. And collectively, everyone's important, not these little tribes of this is what we do. And if you don't agree with us, then you're against us. Learning from each other. And that's the sadness, I believe, at least for me, that when we lost Charlie. He was able to hold those conversations. He was able to hold both sides. And I felt like he handled that in a way that was important. He handled it with what I see as truth. I don't have to necessarily agree with him, but he handled that in a way that he was bringing people together. And I know that that might not be an opinion that everyone shares, but that's what I see in him, and that's where I miss him, because I think he was someone that would have been able to bring people together. And I really see that's where we're headed. We're in all these fragmented spaces, the way we practice medicine, the way that our communities are, even our neighborhoods, we're all separate. And I see people moving more into this unification process. You could look at the medical industry, all these specialists. And holistic medicine is coming through, shining through, looking at the whole person, looking at mind, body, soul, not just the body. All of these things are just this essence of fragmentation. So yeah, this unification process, and that means that everyone's important. Everyone.
What is absolutely, I totally agree with you. What is something that you wish like traditional liberals understood about us as conservatives that maybe is they keep getting wrong over and over again, that they think we think X when that's really doesn't apply to us at all, but it keeps getting the algorithm keeps pushing it, and you can see if they get triggered, they parrot it right away, or whatever, where you're like, well, that's not really true. I don't even know if they think some of the things they say are true, but what is something that maybe you wish they understood about us that they don't? And then I'll ask you, maybe let's imagine what liberals, what's the frustration there? Where do they feel really misunderstood by us?
Well, I think that actually, falls into what I was saying. I've had so many discussions with liberals about things and how I think, whether it's guns or the border or January 6th, which is like a very important topic for some reason. And I don't know that there's any one thing, but I think the thing that gets really lost in translation is that we are more alike. So in all of these conversations that I have had, and I'm sorry if this is like a blanket answer, but rather than like any individual one thing, I think really what I've found over these years, as well as I've been trying to, drag people over into truth, is that we are so much more alike than we are different. And if we can kind of strip away all of the, you know, the sludge that culture puts on us, and we get to the core essence of our humanity, we can fundamentally agree on just about everything. We just don't agree on how we do it. And so it's less about you're right and I'm wrong. It's more about how do we go about supporting those ideals? And that's where we get really caught up in it becomes very problematic. And we lose out on this collaborative process as well, because it's important for everyone's thoughts to be brought in. And there's, of course, going to be some areas where we're really not going to agree, you know, if we start talking about abortion, you know, there's some pretty fundamental, you know, we're not going to agree spaces. But I think on both sides, and this is, you know, the people at the gym that we're talking about, not the algorithm extremists that we see on Instagram. We really are so much more alike than we are different. And even my biker friend who was yelling at me, if we could get through that and just really get to the essence of what's happening, we're very much in the same place.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because it's not funny, but it's interesting that, you know, the top note of your biker friend yelling and screaming, he's unhinged and things are coming apart in the world, in his view, as they were for us when Charlie got assassinated. Like everybody was like, oh my God, what is going on? What reality am I in right now? Like, and I think anger and yelling at somebody that you think is to blame or like whatever is triggering for you. Clearly, if you're on a bike yelling at a female biker, just railing, you're unhinged. That's not really about her at all. It's about your internal state.
Yes.
As it would be for me if I was yelling at some woman at a grocery store, later on, I would probably go, you know what? What in the hell is going on with you right now? Like
Yep.
that's not a sensible behavior. What's triggering you? What are you really upset about? Is there some delicate part of you? Is there some part of your inner child? Like something is going on, Tony, because yelling at the grocery clerk out of the blue is not how a mature man who's not triggered. Like, what was the trigger? And then what was underneath the trigger? And then what was underneath that? Now we're getting to the wound that,
Exactly.
you know, and so, you know, I think when I imagine, like, one thing I would love for liberals to really understand is conservatives, for me, I want what's best for future generations. There's plenty of liberals that have children. I actually want what's best for them. You know, I want us to have options as a nation, not be ramrooted into some Marxist like you know, blueprint where we all got to do the same thing. Like that doesn't, to me, and so it's like I wish they would understand, look, all those conservative truthers, Jessica, Tony, and everybody, they're actually fighting for my children and grandchildren,
Yes.
right? That's what's in their heart. And they just their opinions about things are different. And like, I'm not trying to take things away from them. I'm trying to make sure we don't get options removed from the table, which we saw in COVID could happen really fast if there's nobody going to fight for the options and the freedoms, right? And then I think on the liberal side, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts. Like, I think maybe a frustrating thing for them, perhaps, is they don't think we understand how unfair the system is. They don't think we are, they think we think the system's just great. Like this whole thing where billionaires are created and then we've got just more and more people that are just like stressing out. I think that we don't understand that doesn't work. Or, you know, why does the system create so many brown-skinned prisoners, right? Like, and they would say, oh, these white people don't understand it. And the thing is like, I want to listen to what they say, and I do understand it, but I would want their perspective on it a bit more, maybe. Like, I'm not in my white ivory tower. I hardly have tons of money and all that stuff, right? I'm not like that. And I used to be a liberal. I read the same fucking Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn books that every liberal read. So I understand the hate white skin, hate America is a Marxist like idea that has really gone out there. But I think they're like, well, they don't take that seriously how bad things are. And I do understand I do understand to some level, but I think they would want a little bit more nuanced understanding of where they're coming from. Does that make sense?
And it's kind of the heart of everything. You know, people
Yeah.
just want to be heard and seen. Like, we're all just, I mean, Tony, we're just a bunch of, I mean, for the most part, we're just a bunch of hurt
Children.
children running
Yeah.
around in adult suits. I mean, it's
Yeah.
really like funny, but so spot on. And that's why it's really hard to talk about these divisive topics, especially that are so reactive, if we're also not talking about that space as well. I
Yeah.
mean, they're just so aligned. They're interconnected, entangled almost, because you can't really figure out one if you're not looking at the other. And I do find that the more someone has done that work on themselves, the more open they are, the more compassionate they are for the other, so to speak.
Yeah.
And the more curious that they can actually be. You know, like I hear in you what you're saying, I hear curiosity. You know, I hear a real kind of acknowledgement of a subjective truth. Like, I see you, person on the left, on the other side, and you have a truth and it's yours, and I don't share it. But hey, could you help me understand how you got there?
Yeah.
And I'm totally down for those conversations.
I love it.
And I think that many people are, unfortunately, and I might have a blind spot here. Unfortunately, I believe that the left doesn't always know why they have that opinion or that belief,
Correct. Yeah.
because it's not necessarily founded in something deeper. It's a shallow belief system. And that's what I have found when you ask questions and the anger comes out, because you can ask a couple questions and then you get to a point where they're upset and it's because they don't know.
Yeah.
And so I find the people that are more founded in their own truth, the more that they know who they are, they're open to those conversations, like a real genuine curiosity. I know I was like genuinely curious about people wearing masks by themselves outside. Like,
Yeah.
why?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, not in a, I mean, it's funny. Honestly, it's funny.
I know.
But really in a like a compassionate human way, like, what happened to you that this feels like a reasonable response? With all the love in the world, you know, like, I'm sorry that something, what, where, how did we get here? You know, and so I don't even know if that's answering the question,
Yeah,
but
it
I don't
is.
know how we can't, we have to look at like the psychological component, the spiritual component, the psyche of the person. And then we have to also ask the question, like, do they really believe in what they're saying? Or are they just copy pasting what they heard because
Right.
they're part of this group? And
Well,
I think we run into that a lot.
we do, and I think that this is going to be part of Charlie's legacy, is that I believe, and I'm curious to see what you think about this. I believe, just like there are truthers in the right, in conservative truthers who've been speaking, dropping red pills the whole way through. Let's say they're not right on everything, but man, they have helped spread the word about what's really going on. Just like those truthers are the vanguard of the movement, I believe there will be, and you're already seeing it in the walkaway movement, but I think there'll be a vanguard of traditional Kennedy liberals that have started to shed some of their conditioning, whether that means they do like, oh, I'm deleting my account, or I'm off of social media. I just don't think it's good for them. Like, they're gonna have some come Jesus moment where they're like, I'm just gonna go neutral for a while. I'm just gonna have conversation. You know, there's people like that on the left as well, that are kind of like, let me see. I'm curious. And I think some of those will be open to conversations, particularly if they are seen and listened to by whoever's in that process with them. And so I think Charlie has shown us that we can have courage, because a lot of people, myself included, I'm speaking for myself, I don't know, necessarily want to get into conversations that have so much, difference of opinion and conflict and just the possibility of being triggered. But for myself, I'm just kind of like, There's a part of me that kind of like, can I just drop episodes and not have these challenging conversations? But the truth is, the needle doesn't move without conversations like Charlie was having. And it doesn't have to be a big rally at University of Washington. It could be a simple conversation that maybe you're just in front of somebody and they're like, I feel really upset and blah, 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 blah. And you'd be like, tell me about that. I'm a conservative, but I want to hear what you have to say. And just be open to those kinds of conversations. I think that'd be incredibly healing. And even if each of us had a few of those conversations, who knows when the tipping point would be reached where all of a sudden it doesn't, we're not demonizing reflexively the other side as much. Anyways, that's my two cents. And then I'll let you talk about that just for a second. Then I just wanted to ask you what you're optimistic about, because I'm finished with that, and then maybe tell us a little bit about what you got going on, and tell us about the dad army thing if you've got that information. So as we kind of bring this to a close, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I love this conversation. And I think it kind of piggybacks on what we were talking about when we met last, and being that bridge and, extending that hand, for anyone that is ready. I think it's really important. And one thing that came to mind as well is, and I do think that the liberals have this sort of disenfranchise the systems against us. It's stacked, patriarchy, whatever words we want to say. But I think the biggest hurdle that everyone has had to come to, or will have to, and I think those that have stepped over that and are able to extend the hand, it's really important. But not only are the systems not working, the hardest thing is there's someone or something. Now, there are well-meaning people within all of these systems, but there's someone or something that is intentionally doing this. And that right there, that little essence of truth, and I accept that it's a hard one, even when we talk about medical freedom. So you mean my doctor's trying to hurt me? And it's like, well, no, I don't think your doctor's trying to hurt you. But I do think there's someone within that system that has an intention of you not being healthy.
Correct. You they
And
make a
that's
lot that system makes a lot of money on sick people.
And the same thing with the government, and all of these different, the school systems, all of them, teachers are amazing. Teachers are wonderful. There's some that aren't, but there's all these different places like colleges. There's knowledge and things being shared. All of these things are really important, but there's something in each of them that is intentionally, maliciously going after us to inflict that.
That might be the one thing that is different from the groups, wouldn't you say? Because I think I know a lot of conservatives, and most of them are like, oh yeah, the deep state, the cabal, these psychopathic, like, or and then the other side, the left, some are just like, Bill Gates is just great. I'm like, Bill Gates is trying to kill you and block the sun and poison the food with, like, how is he such a great guy? Who is this? Who is this psycho? And so they're just like, he's a weird conspiracy theorist. And I'm like, well, I've seen different things in my inputs. And so that may be the biggest divide, Jessica, is
It is.
a knowledge that there is this kind of cabal. That is, and I can show people, a 2-minute slideshow that would, if they were curious, they would go down any number of about 8 different rabbit holes and they would know what we know. But
Yes.
I think there's this kind of in the matrix, don't pull me out of the slime pod quite yet because I want to be comfortable. And I left the slime pod a long time ago. And I'm like, how are we going to get some more people out of there? So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's uncomfortable, once you leave that
Yeah, it
slime,
is.
it's you become responsible. With awareness comes responsibility, and that's really what you're seeing people fighting.
Yeah.
They're fighting that responsibility. It's also a timing thing. And then, the conservative side or the aware group, whatever that means, we also have to be really careful. I love this term blackpilled, but we have to be very careful to not turn everything into conspiracy as well, because
Yep.
that's the intention is for awareness. And then what you do with that is you go into your own personal responsibility path. And so, yeah, but I do think that's really at the heart of everything that the most, and I've been in conversations with my own father on this, who convincing someone that there is a malicious intent out there is incredibly, incredibly difficult.
They have to see it for themselves. That's all I gotta say. Like, and I kind of realize I'm not, it's not my job, even as a podcaster, to reach the people that are like, no, there's no such thing as a deep state. You know, like, there's no maliciousness in the central banks and the unlawful IRS and, you know, all these billionaires that are like, you know, don't like humanity very much. Yeah, that's not a pattern at all. You know, it doesn't go back, thousands of years. Like, it's all been put together lovingly for your consideration. But you gotta do it yourself. There's a proof of work. I can't tell you, I can't tell my brother about it. Like, listen to the podcast if any of the episodes are you're curious about, but you got to do the work, man. Like, there is a self-responsibility that you had spoken about earlier. When it comes to this, you got to do the work. Like, it's not hard. It just takes some time and consideration to sit and look and read books and look through videos and listen to podcasters that are on the rabbit holes that you're trying to flip. Like, it takes work. And but you'll come out of it with a much greater appreciation of what's been going on, and you'll probably understand a whole lot about the conservative movement and what's some of what's not all of what's driving it, but some of what's driving it. And I completely agree with you, Jessica. Like, I my as conspiracy minded, quote unquote, as I've been, and I've been down all the rabbit holes, and I've integrated some, and some I've dismissed because I'm like, that's just a little too far. I'm not a black pillar. I don't like the black pill. I think God and humanity win ultimately. I think God's got us. I think he's bringing us through this. I think it's glorious. I think there's terrible things that happen in this story of humanity, but my spiritual beliefs is the soul is immortal, and I love Charlie, and I know Charlie's watching out, and we're carrying on his work because he stood for principles. And so as we stand in those principles, not as an us versus them, but as a, you know, we're going to figure this out. And the black pill doomer is that's not really helping because it's creating more low vibe fear, and we can't do it. We can't overcome.
Really, it really does.
Do you know what I mean? So,
It's the opposite of optimism. It's for
And I kind of feel like one of our superpowers is our optimism and our can do, both as Americans, as just humans, right?
I agree. And yeah, you had asked me about that. I see it everywhere. I see it everywhere. We are shifting into this space of personal responsibility and awareness. And this book that I've been kind of reading over the summer slowly is this book by James Hollis called The Middle Passage. And it's a little bit more kind of our age. And it talks about a second adulthood. And there's this midlife crisis that we all hear about, but he calls it the middle passage. And it's this very developmentally appropriate passage from, you've kind of done the early adulthood and you move into this second adulthood. And I see us collectively moving into an adulthood. And I think that the left celebrates childhood too much. And I actually think it's really important to become an adult.
Yes, that is really good.
Yeah.
That's a really good distinction. You know, I had James Hollis on my show a couple seasons ago.
Oh, did you?
I love his writing. I don't know if I've read The Middle Passage, though. I might have read a couple others. I'll pick that one up. But I had him on. We had this phenomenal, I mean, it was one of the best episodes. He's just as brilliant speaking as he is writing. But at the end, you know, I'm like, I got to see if I could get, you know, I'm like, hey, would you be willing to come? And he's like, listen, he's like, I love talking to you. I love that you're aware of myth and shadow work and humanity goes to go, but I can't promise you I'm coming back. Not that I didn't have a good time. He goes, I'm old and I'm really busy and everybody wants to talk to me. So he goes, but good luck. You know, and I'm like, yeah, okay. Done like a true master, a very respectful, not sure. You could try, but I'm not promise you I'm coming back on. And I'm
Oh,
not,
that's amazing.
and not because I didn't have a great time or we didn't make a great episode. I can only do so many of these things. So
Oh, that's so good. I have to scroll back. Yeah, he's really incredible. And I think it's just really important. You know, we kind of do this, we have this whole like culture of you do you and stay young. And I think that you should absolutely have joy in your life and fun. But I think through the lens of being an adult and being a responsible adult, and that's really what's missing. And what happens when we have a collective shift into this second adulthood where we're becoming aware of what needs to happen is that we also are growing a culture of elders, which is severely missing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's like, I do see this like resurgence. I feel it. I feel it in myself. Even when I speak on these things in my own personal life, it holds a resonance that makes me feel really hopeful.
I'm 59. I love being 59. Like I feel so good. I feel healthy. I feel vibrant. I feel I've grown some wisdom because I've had to go through all the hero's journey and the shadow work and all that stuff. I'm so looking forward to my 60s. And that might sound weird to somebody that's like, you know, you're getting gray hair or, you know, whatever is the thing. I just don't fear. I'm excited about my older years. I feel like they hold a lot of promise. And I'm excited about being an elder and what all that represents and helping to redefine maybe what elderhood is both for men and women. That's a conversation that's really fascinating to me because as soon as we start honoring the voices of our elders and have that be kind of marshaled and content created around that, I feel like that's kind of our version of the oral history, like the stories and the myths will live in the elders. And that's what it's supposed to be. We're supposed to hand down books and pamphlets and stories around the campfire so that our young sons and grandsons, they go, okay, this is the medicine that my elders left for me. And I'm going to honor them because I can hear the resonance of truth in Jessica's voice, or I can hear there's something there that is food for me, for the soul. And I can sense it, even though I maybe can't articulate it so well.
Yeah, I love that. And you know, you said something that really is interesting to me. Maybe that's definitely not a time and place, but maybe that's a whole other conversation. But when we talk about the role of gender, you talked about it specific to as an elder, but you know, that is something that's really important as well. Just kind of stepping into these natural roles that I think have really been diminished in culture today. And that those have the potential to really open up people in ways that I believe instantly could change things. You know, if men and women were able to step into themselves in the way that we were really intended, that resonates, that when we hear it or see it, we know it to be truth. And the myth archetypes, those types of things really, you know, pull that out of us. Oh, there's such capacity for change there. That's what I'm super optimistic about that.
Me too. I just had a light bulb go off. Here I am rambling. I'm telling you, we're getting off like 20 minutes ago. We're just like, we're just going on and on. Like it's a long, like long lost friend, which you are. But I was thinking that it would be great to come down to Dad Army and you and I do a little workshop for Dad Army if they're going to be doing little stuff like that where we're doing learnings together, and you and I could put together an elder growing into elder and use some of the archetype stuff that I've done, but like partner men and women. I think that would be a super awesome little, you know, breakout if they're going to be doing classes and stuff like that, but we could offer that. I would be super excited to co-create that if you wanted to do that. That would be awesome.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, that's incredible. And we do have the, that would be so amazing. And also someone who's really in that space, and I think you've had him on as well, as Simon Essler, who is in Dad Army. He's incredible and a video storyteller, which is, who's amazing. Yeah, we have the Dad Army conference coming up next spring, and there's a lot of potential for that as well. I think that that's just incredibly important. So I am down for that, definitely.
Awesome. Do you have dates on the Dad Army?
Not yet. We're still working with venues and aligning speakers, venues, and also the lovely time of year when everyone travels to Arizona. So but it will be in the spring. And as soon as I get that, I'll absolutely reach out.
Okay, great. And we'll let our listeners know. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on Basecamp for Men and sharing your heart and your insight and your wisdom. So appreciate talking to you. I love having you on as a guest and look forward to being down there with you during the Dad Army thing in the spring. And yeah, let's just keep in touch. I really love what you're doing, and it just feels like we're building momentum in this kind of pro-humanity movement that includes all sides, actually. So thank you so much today.
Yeah, thank you, Tony.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Always great to connect with Jessica. I just love people that are open to new conversations. And I'm looking forward to the Dad Army get-together down in Phoenix that Jessica mentioned. We'll give you more details as we know more. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.